fans, we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
This is VOA Sunny Young in Washington. Welcome to the Sunny Side of Sports. First leg round of 16 action continues this Tuesday evening in the UEFA Champions League, Europe's premier club football tournament. There are matches in London and Munich. In London, 2012 European champion Chelsea is at home against Barcelona, five-time winners of Europe's top trophy. Now, this is shaping up as one of the most interesting fixtures in the round of 16. The Blues of Chelsea will try to find a way to stop Luis Enrique's in-form Barcelona, which is unbeaten in Spain's La Liga and the UEFA Champions League this season. The Blues have failed to reach the heights of last year when they won their sixth English Premier League title. Chelsea's Italian manager, Antonio Conte, is facing increasing pressure after recent league losses to Watford and West Bromwich Albion. However, the Blues have shown signs of a return to form with wins in their last two matches. Chelsea is currently in fourth place in the Premier League, 19 points behind front-running Manchester City, which suffered a surprising elimination from the FA Cup Monday when it lost at Third Division Wigan 1-0. More on that match shortly, but let's give some Sunny Side of Sports props to Barcelona, which has a comfortable 7-point lead over Atletico Madrid in Spain's La Liga. Lionel Messi and Luis Suarez surely will be on the hunt for goals at Stamford Bridge in London. Argentine superstar Messi leads La Liga with 20 goals, and the Uruguayan Suarez is right behind him with 17 goals. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. In the other UEFA Champions League match on Tuesday evening, five-time European champion Bayern Munich is the favorite when it hosts Besiktas of Turkey in Germany. Besiktas is in the round of 16 for the first time. As I mentioned earlier, Manchester City, the runaway leader in the Premier League this season, was upset by third division host Wigan Monday 1-0 in the FA Cup. Wigan also beat Man City in the 2013 FA Cup final. And this time around, Will Griggs' late goal was enough for the League One team to pull off another upset in the fifth round. Wigan will face Southampton next in the FA Cup quarterfinals. Man City played the entire second half with 10 men after left-back Fabian Delph was red-carded just before halftime for a strong challenge on Max Power. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. In Germany, Eintracht Frankfurt came from behind to beat Leipzig 2-1 as fans vented their fury in the first of five contentious Monday night matches to be played in the Bundesliga. Kevin Prince Boateng, who was sent home from Ghana's 2014 World Cup team for disciplinary reasons, rolled in what proved to be the game-winning goal for Frankfurt in the 26th minute. The kickoff was delayed as fans protested by throwing tennis balls onto the pitch. I scratched my head and wondered, was Boris Becker behind that protest? What are you doing throwing tennis balls onto a pitch? Fans of teams across the Bundesliga have made their opposition to Monday night matches known, and the protests are set to continue. Many Dortmund fans have indicated they will boycott their home game against Augsburg next week when few visiting supporters are expected. Dortmund fans issued a statement saying, and I quote, "Regardless of whether school kids, students, or workers, for many fans, a visit to the stadium on a Monday evening entails unreasonable strain." I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. In African football news, the top Nigerian club Kano Pillars has announced the death of 28-year-old defender Chinedu Udoji in a car crash on Sunday. The accident happened just a few hours after a league match against his former club, Enyimba, which described Udoji on Twitter as a ferocious captain and leader on the pitch, but a warm and gentle friend off it. Udoji joined Kano Pillars in 2016 after seven seasons with two-time African champions Enyimba. During his career, Chinedu Udoji won two league titles, two Federation Cups, and reached the semifinal of the 2011 African Champions League with Enyimba. Udoji is survived by his wife and two children. Kenya's Football Federation says the 61-year-old Belgian Paul Put has resigned as head coach of the country's national team, nicknamed the Harambee Stars. The federation says Put stepped down for personal reasons, and it described his decision as, I quote, "a setback to the country's ongoing 2019 Africa Cup of Nations qualification campaign." Stanley Okumbi, who was in charge of the Harambee Stars in 2016, will take over as Kenya's interim coach. Paul Put previously coached the national teams of Gambia and Burkina Faso. Under his leadership, the Stallions of Burkina Faso reached the final of the 2013 Africa Cup of Nations tournament in South Africa, where they lost to the Super Eagles of Nigeria 1-0. I'm Sonny Young in Washington, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. Just ahead, an update on Tuesday's action at the Winter Olympics in Pyeongchang, South Korea. Canadian figure skaters Tessa Virtue and Scott Moore cemented their place in Winter Olympics history with a gold medal-winning performance Tuesday in South Korea. Virtue and Moore thrilled the audience with a flawless routine set to the soundtrack of the movie musical Moulin Rouge in the free dance part of the competition, and finished with a combined total score of 206.07 added from the short program and free skate. They finished first ahead of the French duo of Gabriela Papadakis and Guillaume Cizeron, who had just set the world record moments earlier with a combined score of 205.28. The American brother and sister team of Maya and Alex Shibutani finished third to win the bronze medal. Tessa Virtue and Scott Moore are going home with two gold medals from the Pyeongchang Games, including the one they captured at last week's team skate event. That brings their total career Olympic medal count to five, the most by any figure skating pair. Meanwhile, it was another Canada-France-USA finish in the women's freestyle half-pipe skiing event, with Cassie Sharp taking the gold, followed by France's Marie Martinon and Britta Sigourney of the USA. In speed skating, host South Korea took home the gold medal on Tuesday in the ladies' 3,000-kilometer relay, with Italy winning the silver medal and the Netherlands earning the bronze. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. Away from the ice rinks and ski slopes, the Pyeongchang Games are dealing with a third doping case. Slovenian ice hockey player Žiga Jeglič was ordered to leave the Olympic Village in 24 hours after testing positive for fenoterol, a drug that's designed to open the airways to the lungs. Jeglič says the drug was in an inhaler used to treat an asthma condition under doctor's orders. Jeglich's dismissal from the Winter Olympics follows on the heels of Japanese short track speed skater Kai Saito, who failed a pre-competition test, and Russian curler Alexander Krushelnitsky, who tested positive after winning a bronze medal in his sport. The National Basketball Association will resume its regular season on Thursday evening with six games after a one-week break for the All-Star Game and other festivities. And joining us now to talk about some of the NBA developments is sports reporter Dan Friedel. Hi, Dan.
Hi, Sonny. Good to be here again. And looking forward to the next third of the NBA season.
How many games approximately are left for our listeners that might not be familiar with the NBA?
The teams have about 25 games to go, with the first round of the playoffs scheduled to start in the middle part of April, which means the teams that made moves leading into the All-Star break and the teams that decided to stand pat have about 25 games to go to get things locked down if they're going to hold on to their current position or perhaps move up in the pecking order.
Well, one team that definitely made some big moves ahead of the All-Star break, Dan, the Cleveland Cavaliers, a squad near and dear to your heart. And in fact, they'll be at home on Thursday evening against my beloved Washington Wizards. The Cavaliers, what a shakeup. Talk about what the Cavs did, Dan.
Well, you know, this upcoming game between the Cavs and the Wizards, I think, should be a good starting point for both teams for the last part of the season. Certainly, the Wizards have, I think, outperformed expectations in recent weeks without their all-star point guard, John Wall. A lot of people were concerned that the Wizards might start spiraling down the drain in the Eastern Conference without Wall, but they've performed in a really outstanding way, moving the ball well and getting a lot of assists and playing a really strong team game without Wall. And on the other side, the Cleveland Cavaliers look like they're ready to make a run for the number one spot in the Eastern Conference, thanks to a big trade by the Cavs general manager late last week before the trading deadline, as the trading deadline was set to expire. The Cavs managed to get their hands on a number of players, moving Isaiah Thomas to the Lakers, moving Dwayne Wade to the Miami Heat, releasing a couple other players, and freeing up some space on their roster for some of these younger guys from the Lakers and from some of the West Coast teams. And the Cavs won four games in a row heading into the All-Star break. A really impressive performance by the Cavs. And it looks like they might be ready to make a run in the Eastern Conference, which currently is led by the Toronto Raptors, perhaps a little bit surprisingly.
If we take a look at that trade and what it has done for the Cavaliers, Dan, is it safe to say it has made them younger and more athletic?
Without a doubt. I mean, the Cavs were having a lot of trouble this year trying to figure out how to fit LeBron James with some of the other players that they had acquired in the offseason. Certainly they were waiting for Isaiah Thomas, who they acquired in the summer in the Kyrie Irving trade, to get healthy. And it looks like Thomas is really going to need maybe another summer to get himself back into the shape that he was in late last season as he was leading the Celtics to the Eastern Conference Finals against the Cavs. You also remember that not too long ago, Kevin Love broke his hand in one of the games close to the All-Star break. He missed the All-Star game. And basically, you're leaving LeBron James alone with a diminished Isaiah Thomas and a couple of the other role players on the Cavs. I mean, just looking at the roster now, the Cavs are using some young guys like Sadie Osman, George Hill, who came over in the trade, Jordan Clarkson, who came over in a trade, Larry Nance Jr., who came over in the trade, Rodney Hood. And they're surrounded now with players like Jeff Green and Kyle Korver and Jose Calderon and Tristan Thompson and J.R. Smith, who all are fitting in a little bit better and not being expected to do quite as much as they were expected to do before the trade.
Larry Nance Jr., his father also has ties to the Cavs. Talk about that, Dan.
Yeah, 20 years ago, which is kind of a nice coincidence, it's the 20th anniversary coming up in about a week of when Larry Nance was traded to the Cavaliers for Kevin Johnson, who was a rookie at the time, turned out to be an all-star player with the Phoenix Suns, but Nance was an established all-star player with the Suns, came over to the Cavs in the 1988 season, leading into the playoffs. Now, the Cavs lost again that season to the Chicago Bulls, who turned out to be their arch nemesis with Michael Jordan and Scottie Pippen in the Eastern Conference playoffs those seasons. They lost to the Bulls in a five-game series. But Larry Nance became a fixture for the Cavs. And if you remember, the Cavs played in an arena called the Richfield Coliseum, kind of a broken-down arena at that point before moving to downtown Cleveland in the late 90s. But Larry Nance finished his career with the Cavs, settled in the area between Cleveland and Akron, and kept his family there for the remainder of the time. And it turns out that Larry Nance Jr., who is now a member of the Cleveland Cavaliers, was a star player at a local high school, helped the team to the playoffs when he was a senior. I'm just reading a story by one of the writers in Cleveland. It turns out that Larry Nance Jr. started high school under 6 feet tall, finished high school at 6'7", and got a scholarship to the University of Wyoming. A few years later, he is a first-round draft pick by the Los Angeles Lakers. Nance has a younger sibling who's a senior in high school at the same high school, who's going to college next year on a scholarship to Northwestern University. He's 6'10" and should probably get to the 7-foot mark by the time he's done with college. And Larry Nance, the father, is kind of a special assistant with the basketball program at the high school, helping the big men with their moves down low, and also helping the girls' basketball team, because Larry Nance's daughter is the coach of the girls' basketball team. So, you know, it doesn't always happen that players who get traded in their career from another city wind up settling down in the city where they finish their career, but that's what happened with the Nance family. So it's really a nice homecoming for Larry Nance Jr. to be able to play for the Cavs and be so close to home and see his parents and siblings. VOA!
I'm VOA's Sonny Young. You're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. I'm chatting with Dan Friedell about All-Star Week in the NBA as teams get ready to get back on the court. Dan, earlier you mentioned the Toronto Raptors. They have the best record in the Eastern Conference, 41 wins, 16 losses. And Dan, how about a shout-out for Toronto's Nigerian president?
Yeah, Masai Ujiri is really kind of an overlooked executive in the NBA. He doesn't make a lot of headlines, but he's really done a tremendous job with this franchise. I mean, the Raptors were an expansion team. They came into the NBA, I think, at the same time as the Vancouver Grizzlies did. Of course, now we know that the Vancouver Grizzlies play in Memphis. The Raptors have really established themselves as a powerful team in the Eastern Conference. Now, of course, their rise has coordinated with the rise of the Cleveland Cavaliers, especially with the second act of LeBron James in Cleveland after LeBron went to Miami. And the Cavs have made the NBA Finals 3 years in a row, winning the championship one time, of course. And they have kept the Raptors perhaps from fulfilling their greatest potential. But the Raptors have had an outstanding season, and they really can't be forgotten about as we start looking at the playoffs of the Eastern Conference. I mean, certainly the Raptors have a 3 or 4 game lead over the other teams in the Eastern Conference. It looks like the Boston Celtics are maybe finding their way a little bit after a pre-All-Star break slump, and perhaps the Cavs are on the rise. But right now, if the season ended today, the Raptors would be the number one team and have home court advantage. And I think we all remember how strong that home court was in the playoffs a couple of seasons ago. The Raptors have an outstanding player in DeMar DeRozan and a good second player in Kyle Lowry, who they were both All-Stars playing in the recent All-Star game. The Raptors could prove to be kind of an underdog contender to make it to the championship series out of the Eastern Conference. It'll be interesting to see how they hold up in the playoffs, which is the spot where they've been knocked off in the past.
I'm VOA's Sonny Young. You're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. I'm talking with Dan Friedell. Dan, heading into the All-Star break, the two clubs with the longest winning streaks, the Houston Rockets, 10-game winning streak, and the Utah Jazz, 11-game winning streak. Talk about the Jazz, Dan.
Yeah, the Jazz, I think the Jazz have a chance to do some damage in the Western Conference. Certainly, they're going to need to keep things going. Right now, they would not be in the playoffs if this season ended today. But they're very close to overtaking the Los Angeles Clippers, the New Orleans Pelicans, perhaps even with a few more games, could jump up into the sixth spot, overtaking the Denver Nuggets. But the Jazz are a solid squad. You know, they're not, they weren't really expected to do so much this season, certainly after losing Gordon Hayward, who wound up going to the Boston Celtics. We know that he injured his leg in a scary injury on the opening night of the season. But if they keep up this pace, certainly if they can win some more games on the road, they look to be a strong team at home, they could definitely do some damage in the playoffs. They've got a solid up-and-coming squad.
Thanks, Dan. That's sports reporter Dan Friedell. And we'll hear more from Dan later this week on the show. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. I encourage our VOA listeners to follow the Sunny Side of Sports on Facebook and Twitter. My Facebook address is facebook.com/VOA Sunny, and my Twitter handle is @VOA Sunny Sports. At my Facebook page, you'll see a nice photo by Bob Donnan, a photographer for USA Today Sports. Bob took a photo of a smiling LeBron James, the Cleveland Cavaliers superstar, and LeBron's three children after LeBron won his third career National Basketball Association All-Star Game MVP award on Sunday in Los Angeles, California. For our VOA basketball fans keeping score, LeBron's children are named LeBron Jr., Bryce Maximus, and his daughter is named Jury. Magnus Chisholm Onwuadiwe, the humble apostle of the Sunny Side of Sports, checks in again from Owerri, Nigeria, at my Facebook page. Magnus writes, "Beautiful family, and congratulations to LeBron on the MVP award." Ricky Shalika, writing from Abuja, Nigeria, at my Facebook page, writes, "Congratulations, King of Basketball." Well, LeBron's nickname is King James, right? And that wraps up the February 20th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to Voice of America producer Bill Werkinger. Thanks also to VOA engineer Nelson Lopes. And thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA Sonny Young in Washington, and that's the Sunny Side of Sports.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
February 6th marked the International Day of Zero Tolerance to Female Genital Mutilation or Cutting. The United States stands in solidarity with governments and communities around the world working to end this human rights abuse, said State Department spokesperson Heather Nauert in a statement released on February 6th. According to UNICEF, at least 200 million girls and women alive today have undergone some form of female genital mutilation or cutting. If current trends continue, an additional 15 million girls are at risk of being subjected to the practice by 2030. Although it is illegal in most countries, these laws are not always enforced. Female genital mutilation is often performed in communities where the value and status of women and girls lags behind that of men and boys. The United States partners with a broad range of stakeholders, from policymakers and health practitioners to religious leaders and youth activists, to work against female genital mutilation or cutting and raise awareness of the harm it causes to societies, Ms. Nauert said. U.S. Department of State officials continue to engage diplomatically with host governments and through bilateral and multilateral partners to end this practice. In 2017, the department contributed $5 million to UN efforts combating female genital mutilation, and its annual country reports on human rights practices include country-by-country information on the prevalence of the practice and international efforts taken to combat it. Building on investments made in previous years to address the problem, we continue to advance initiatives to support survivor-centered programs in countries where female genital mutilation is most prevalent, Ms. Nauer noted. The department's programs promote the abandonment of female genital mutilation and work with communities and civil society organizations to increase their capacity to implement laws and legislation prohibiting it. This fiscal year, USAID is launching a 3-year pilot activity in Kenya aimed at combating the practice of female genital mutilation and child marriage by tackling the root causes and social motivators that drive these practices, including women's lack of agency, unresponsive health services, and inactive protection networks, and limited economic opportunities for women and girls. The advancement of women and girls is essential to peace, prosperity, and security, said Ms. Nauert. The U.S., she said, remains committed in our efforts to combat all forms of gender-based violence, including female genital mutilation or cutting. And we renew the call for zero tolerance to end this harmful procedure that affects women and girls in far too many places across the globe.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Hello, I'm Lenor Mudu, host of Health Chat. The Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation just released its annual letter highlighting the foundation's work and some frequently asked questions. We will discuss this and more next week on Health Chat with our special guest, Hadi Stades, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation's country director for Ethiopia. For your questions, email us at healthchat@voanews.com. You can also reach us by phone to leave a message or to participate in the program. We will call you back. Dial the international code for the United States, then dial 202-205-9942. The U.S. country code is 1. Dial 45 after you hear the station ID. For listeners to call during the show, our telephone number is 202-691-3111. Health Chat, this Tuesday at 1730 UTC. Right here on VOA Africa.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, South Africa has a new president, Cyril Ramaphosa. He ascended to the top position after the ruling African National Congress ordered the embattled, scandal-plagued Jacob Zuma to step down as president. We will discuss the implications of the ANC's power shift on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.